Welcome to Brota GP. This is episode number 28. On the phone with me as normal is Kevin.
Yo.
And he is dealing with cat issues, which should not surprise you. Everett is here too.
Hey, hey.
Everett, are you the most drunk you've been to start an episode today?
Oh, I'm going to have a typecast of being a drunk.
You say that like a bad thing.
A little more than last time. Yeah, a little more than last time. I had a solid dinner here tonight in Portland, and there were some cocktails involved, and, you know, it worked out.
Yeah, Everett is recording from a hotel room again, which is which is comical. Dennis,
last time he was late because he was meeting a dude, and now he's recording from a hotel room while drunk. What is happening?
Yeah, why are you in Portland on Tuesday night so often?
I know, really. What are you doing in Portland?
It's going down.
What is going
on? Doing big things.
It's going down on big things.
Doing deals. Hey, we're not talking about you, okay?
Whatever. Dennis is here too. Dennis, say something and get us on track.
You know, I'm also known as the Brota GP Superbike slut over here. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we didn't. This is kind of a slight surprise episode because we normally don't record after only Superbike races. But let's talk
surprise about, fuckers.
Surprise. But let's. So we were able to watch Assen Superbike at Assen this last weekend, and some crazy stuff went down. So in race one, we managed to see an American on the podium, which was kind of awesome.
The crazy stuff went down at Dat Assen.
At Dat Assen. they don't get the cool logo that MotoGP has, right?
A-Style is not happening.
No.
It's quite sad. That would have been a good Instagram post.
Oh, yeah.
But all right, race one. So Dennis, you watched the races. What happened in race one? Give us a quick recap.
Actually, I know Kevin didn't watch it, but he was pretty stoked about one particular result, which is...
Watching World Superbike is like watching WNBA. I suppose you're watching a sport.
What?
But really?
Dennis.
Anyway, what I'm trying to get at is, let's get this one out of the way. Leon Camier and Via Gusta.
Yes.
That was clutch. That was super clutch, yeah.
Of all the Superbike posts in our Instagram account that Kev could post, it's that one.
Yeah, what was
that one? That one got some love, too, dude.
Did you end up getting one of those, Dennis? Did you get your MV?
No, I'm still holding out for the the proper paint scheme.
All right.
No, that was, and not only did he have MV's best result so far, but he also had their best weekend ever with two top 10 finishes with one top 5. So a fourth and a ninth. Previously, a seventh and a ninth was their best weekend they'd ever had, that small little team. And they got a fourth and a ninth this race, which, I don't know, makes me just wonder, a little bit of extra money from AMG and maybe a two-rider team with a smaller guy. I mean, fucking Camier is like Loris Baz. He's a fucking giant who has no business being racing a motorcycle to begin with, you know what I mean? And it's almost like you got to wonder if a guy who fit that bike a little better, a slightly different style, and a team that's getting more data, what could they do?
Well, you got to remember, some of the big dogs crash out, right? So remember that, three of the top guys, the whole front row, effectively DNF'd. So
yeah, that was. I mean, he still would have had two top tens. Like, you can't really take that away from him. And it was, you have to finish the race. But the main thing that MB is dealing with right now is they've had to detune their motors significantly because I think they've already lost two of them. Like, and we're only eight races in. Like, they're seriously coming under fire, and they're probably not gonna make it to the end. And didn't they not make it last year? Didn't Camier have to start from pit lane, like, towards the end of the season?
Yeah, but you know what? They're such a small team. They're not fighting for a championship. You almost think, fuck it. Overtune those motors. Start from pit lane once or twice. Who fucking cares?
Pull the wins.
Time that up. Try and get some podiums. It just seems to me like, you know, it's almost like when Bimota was racing and they weren't even racing for points because they didn't make enough bikes yet. You know, like, who cares if they start from pit lane once or twice? You know what I mean?
Well, and
they didn't even have enough bikes.
Totally changed the system too, because they could like, all right, we qualified shitty here, so let's just run the old motor. But then at a track where they qualify really well, like, throw in the one that's gonna pop after the race. You know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
True. And then, or just, you know, on right. The bad ones, just, all right, we blew it, start from pit lane because we need to rescue a new motor. And I'm pretty sure.
And I know Envy doing well was kind of a side story, but for me, I just think, you know, one of the best things about Superbike is, you root for the bike and the manufacturer just as much as the rider, if not probably more. And to see a marquee like Envy Agusta finally start to get some half-decent results just makes me think, man, a two-rider team, maybe a guy with a slightly different style, a Moto2 guy, maybe someone to come up and just give them extra data, a little more development, because you know that team's like a shoestring budget. What could that team really accomplish? Because I don't care what anyone says, man, MV getting podiums regularly would be so sweet for that series.
All right, but Kev, let me bring it back to a comment that you made about MV having a two-man team and hopefully hiring a second rider that's smaller in stature. Now, this isn't MotoGP where obviously the size of the rider can play a significant role. This is different, and I mean, do you really think a smaller guy? Because we had Tony Elias jump from MotoGP to Superbikes, he didn't do much. So do you really think the size of a second rider?
Yes, but I do think it. And you look at what Marco Melandri's year in GP last year, but when he went to MotoGP or World Superbike, same with Max Biaggi, both pretty small guys, they were competitive right away and were winning in short order. I'm not saying that it's
skill. That's skill, man. I mean, that's skill.
Well, all I'm saying is, look at, it's like Baz, man. Look at Camier on that thing. He looks like Donkey Kong.
Look at your boy Rossi. Look at your boy Rossi. He's tall.
I think what you're trying to say, Kev, is they should hire a GP expat. And
yeah, that's I do. I mean, they. I mean, honestly,
they did. Melandri, but they put him as a test rider.
Right. You almost think like Melandri is such a head case that if he was feeling good, maybe getting some good test rides, throw him as a wild card once in a while, so it's just for fun. He doesn't feel the stress of the whole season. See if he can get any better results. I mean, if they hired Melandri as a test rider, you know, that means their test rider is a guy who's 5'4".
Have you heard anything about him testing the bike? I have not read a single article about him on the bike.
I haven't read an article about it, but I mean, no one reads World Superbike testing articles, dude. Yeah. No one alive.
All right, let's bring it back then. Let's actually talk about the podium in the actual race. So Sykes tucked the front coming into the Timmer chicane at the end. Are you guys surprised at all that he made such a move and just completely blew it?
No, I think Sykes is such a head case, dude.
Good.
Let me just add real quick that I think I read somewhere that he kind of missed the shift.
He
prior
definitely
to his braking marker.
Yeah, he definitely made weird. A mistake. Like he was definitely going faster than Ray, coming out of the previous corner. But then it just like he just blew right by him. Like
that's why he had to push wide, or he would have ran into Ray, and then he flew wide. And where he fucked up is he should have ran the bike off, and he tried to save it to be competitive in the race still and make the turn. And
exactly. That's where he essentially carried into the dirt,
right,
or almost right. Into the dirt.
Off, yeah.
There was no grip way that far offline, and there's no way he was going to be able to carry some 30-degree lean angle or whatever while hard on the brake.
Which that was a solid race, and so you almost – I mean, he kind of got sucked into being competitive because the championship is so contentious that he really did have to go and stay with those guys.
Also, at some point, you got to be sick from being the champion, the near three-time champion, to getting fucking embarrassed by the guy who came over your team and just basically took your team over.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Even like, after your team still builds the new motorcycle around you and you're still getting beat.
Yeah, that's you're right. Getting destroyed. And I mean, you know, Sykes is a guy who's a champion and is a handful of points away from being a three-time champion. And I mean, he lost one championship by half a point. So right. You're talking about a guy who's, you know, seriously good and seriously competitive and knows that he's the guy, brings Kawasaki its first championship in fucking who knows how long, since like Doug Poland or something. And then okay. Ray shows up and breaks records and decimates the field and then looks completely like he's on track to do it again.
Yep. Begs the question, was he really the guy then, or was the bike that more superior to the other bikes?
That's the other thing. I think that can start once you start getting beaten by a guy and doubts about your ability creep in, those other doubts about your own legitimacy start to creep in. Was it the bike? I don't know. Can I beat this guy? All that shit. He's fucking got red mist syndrome, man. Sykes is making all kinds of weird moves lately.
Yeah, so moving on to another weird move then. Vandermark, right, had third place locked up and at least third place, right? And he took the front in one of the fast right-handers.
Dude, that was winner bid. He was in front of the home crowd. He had to go for it.
He was in full winner bid mode, dude. He was going to win that race or crash the fuck out. That was never going to be it.
Yeah, I was like, I want to see him calm down, though, because he definitely showing this entire year that he has the talent to run for the podium. But these mistakes are really not helping him out.
You talking about PJ?
Oh no, you're talking about we're talking about Vandermark, yeah. But that's exactly it, right? And you watch the reaction from his team after he did crash. It's like, oh, it wasn't like, oh my god, it was the disappointment of like, dude, again, really? You gotta keep the rubber down.
Yeah, Ronald Tencate definitely wore his emotions on his face the whole weekend. So
yeah,
they had the camera like staring right at him just for that shot, and it worked out a couple of times.
Money.
So there's the segue. Shall we in between race one and race two, the World Super Short Race? I actually think it's funny. I think that the organization bent their rules for PJ.
Totally did. They had 5 minutes, it said.
Yeah, so the announcer...
From the red flag going out.
Exactly. So the announcers said when the red flag
Back up. Back up for probably because no one else watched this race. What the fuck are you guys talking about?
Yeah, no, we're getting there. Okay, so less than two-thirds of the way into the World Supersport race, a red flag comes out for rain because the race started dry and Supersport bikes, they do not change tires. So...
Okay.
When the red flag comes out, PJ puts his foot out and is slowing down for like I think like the left hander before the Timmer chicane.
He didn't really slow down, but yeah.
He slowed down a little bit because Keenan Sofoglu pulled up.
Enough.
He slowed down a little bit and he tucks the front, but he tucks the front at like 80 miles an hour and the bike just destroys itself. So
nice.
The second that happens, the announcers like freak out because the rule book says that he has 5 minutes to take his bike back to the pits. Otherwise he can't restart after the red flag. So yeah, the rule
is from the moment the red flag comes out, you have 5 minutes to clear the track and then regrid with your new tires and then restart the race.
Well,
the formality of it all.
It's 5 minutes to make it back into the pits. Otherwise, you're not allowed to regrid. So the announcers start like ticking it down essentially, and PJ is not even like he's on his bike finally. Like he kind of walks away from it, and then he realizes that he needs to take it back in. So he gets back on the bike, and like three other guys are pushing his bike back into the pits with him, and he doesn't get back into the pits when 5 minutes is up. And yet somehow they allow him to restart the race. So the team fixes the bike. And then after all that madness, he gets on the bike and they closed pit lane like 10 seconds before he makes it out of pit lane. Like, nice. So the announcers are watching the time clock for when pit lane is supposed to be closed. And they're like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And he's like 60 feet, like still in the pits. He's rolling, but he's not at the end. Like normally the guy at the end of pit lane is supposed to bring out the red flag and stop
Block him off
there. Yeah. Right. Just prevent him from going out on track. And then PJ would be forced to start the race from pit lane. But they let him on the track, and he seriously showed up like into his grid spot like a minute after everyone else did.
That's awesome. That's one of my favorite things about motorcycle racing. I swear to God, half the time they're making it up as they go.
They don't know.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like the whole motorcycle industry in general is full of shitheads who just like motorcycles. That's why you can never get good service and shit always sucks. Because it's always just biker douchebags.
Everyone's cheap. Yeah, they're in it for
Everyone's
the
cheap. No, you know what I mean? Like, no one's doing it because they want to work. They just want to be around bikes. And I swear to God, like, race direction is the same way. You know, and they're like, we need American on the grid, fuck it.
Ask anybody in the industry, unless you're the riders at the top. There's no money in this shit, so yeah.
No, Kevin, I think to your point, I think that's exactly right. They were like, well, this guy's kind of in the championship. He's really popular. We should probably let him on the grid. Let's fudge it a little bit. And they totally, and it seems like they really did, which is crazy. I'm
surprised. Which was good.
And you know what?
Because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, realistically, I'm okay with that.
Okay, I mean, he crashed under red, and well, he's the idiot. The best part was he was trying to put his foot out to signal, hey, you know, clear, you know the drill, Rob. When you're riding out there and you see a red flag, you put your foot out instead of putting your hand up. He thought he was being the cool guy, put his foot up, and the funny thing is, riding bikes, I generally like to wait the outside peg, and he took his foot off the outside peg, and that was enough to give away the traction right there.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of ironic.
Yeah, he probably hit like just a little bit more dampness than the rest of the track, and yeah, just the front completely tucked away. But so after all of that madness with them fudging the rules, he still crashes in the wet.
Yeah, him and Cal are going for the fucking title of who, you know, most expectations, least results.
Yes. Well, in that regard, what was it?
It's
still.
It was what, 3-4 laps left? And it was like he was in contention too, and he just still threw it away. And you're just get it together.
So that's the cool thing about the restart. It was only 6 laps, like his club race distance. So it was a sprint race. Yeah, there's no way you're going to destroy the rain tires. Like the track was fully wet. Like just like they all were running light tanks, and they had plenty of time to, you know, change fork springs and change sag adjustments and stuff to get the bike to work well in the rain. And he still threw it away.
Well, there was two nobodies that were racing their brains out, and then there was Sefoglu, and then as soon as PJ went down, Sefoglu was like, I'll take third. I'm good.
Yeah, so Kyle Ride gets on the or Kyle Ride won the race, right?
Right.
Who? That's his second.
Yeah, hold on.
Kevin, you know who that is?
We got to rein this back in, because we were talking about straight the worst international series there is. Like here, okay, listeners, here's what happened. American crashed again. He's yet to finish a race. Yada, yada, yada. Race number 2, World Superbike, we're going.
All right, next topic.
That's pretty much what happened. Yeah. Moving on.
Great segue.
So race number 2, drying track, and quite a few people made the same.
Hold on, did we even cover in race 1 that Nicky Hayden got his first podium in 5 fucking years? Like, he said that, and I was like, wait, what? And then I counted back and looked, 5 years since that guy got a podium.
He's been on junk bikes for a long time.
Dude. That's a long time. I'm not blaming him for lack of results. I'm just saying, damn, dude, that when you're a world champion and you haven't gotten a podium in 5 years, how do you find motivation to
But you know especially the Nicky Hayden philosophy is preservation of revenue and keeping a solid factory ride that pays the top dollar for the least amount of like actual. Whatever, whether
what?
Those results.
What are you,
he is a career motorcycle rider. He is not trying to be putting risk in anything out there. I mean, look at it. He still got third place. Look at Vandermark. Where was he? Granted, he threw it away, but dude,
Vandermark already had a podium this year.
Plays it so safe. He is not trying to go win races, man. Not at all.
Well, okay, so the beginning of race 2 would actually disagree with you because he led for a few laps and was battling it up with Brooksy and
that means nothing.
It means nothing. He's been promised a new CBR for 2017, which is what he's waiting on. So if
it'll be really cool.
Yeah, you may be right that he's going to chill out for this year, knowing that a lot of his development is going to come to fruition for next year. So. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But whatever. Let's cover the end of Superbike Race 2, and then we'll move on. So
Ray wins.
Yeah. Well, everyone already did that. Come on. Kevin is
done. Covered. All right. Good.
Yeah. Next topic. Can we get to GP? We're all waiting.
Oh, come on. You don't even want to talk about the drying track.
No, I love Superbike. Don't get me wrong. I think the racing's phenomenal.
The Marcel Duinker's mistake and how he misheard Tom Sykes and put on an inter-rear tire instead of a slick. Come on, someone go for it.
Well, you know, I think that's a shame, but considering that mistake, Sykes did a very good job hanging in there for quite a bit before giving up to Ray, though.
Yeah,
there's always an excuse.
I mean, and that goes back to what we were saying about Sykes. Now it's gone from, you know, he's a champ, or oh man, half a point, he could have 2 champs too. He did a pretty good job hanging in. Attaboy, good job, fella. We get a fucking pat him on the head and call, tell him to scamper off with his buddies. I mean, that's what it's come to. Way to hang in there for a bit before the champ showed up. I mean, come on.
Matt Mladen would have won on that intermediate.
Bring me back to your earlier assessment of Sykes, you know, as far as like having red mist or having doubts now about his own talent, about the bike. You know, I kind of don't quite agree. I think everything else just points to just how phenomenal Ray is, instead of whether right. Sykes truly is a champion or a fit to that bike.
I mean, it was two different performances, right? It was red mist in race one, and that mistake and missing the downshift and not just settling for going through the gravel. Because he would have beat Kamier in race one if he had gone through the gravel.
Guys, I don't think that's red mist though. Do we need to redefine red mist? Red mist is when you're battling, banging bars at the guy, and you're so pissed off or annoyed at that said guy that you're willing to do anything to beat them.
Now,
red mist is when the guy's riding around you and causing you problems, so you slow down and run him off the track and shit. Bam, slam into him.
Oh, shit. He just went there. I love it. I don't think it's red mist for Sykes. I think it's overcompensation for the fact that his results are not there, and he wants it, and he's a champion in his mind. He still has that, and he's really trying to do it and make it happen. He just simply... You know, you want to talk about talent outweigh or whatever, but...
My point is that race two was the opposite. Like Dennis said, race two was a controlled, I can't win this one, therefore I'm just going to settle for second place. It was a very...
Yeah, he's not going to double ride. DNF.
Yeah, it was...
You don't double DNF, ride. Man. These guys are pros.
Unless your name is PJ.
he's a young pup, man. He's a young pup. He'll figure it out.
He's our only hope for the international talent now in America. So.
Oh, please don't say that. I mean, I like the guy. I'm rooting for him, but I really don't think he's the next American coming of age kind of.
He's not. I'm not going to get into a Jacobson hating scenario, but let's be real. Yeah. This guy hasn't finished a race in the weakest international series there is. Don't forget, the World Supersport champs are 15th place riders in Moto2. World Supersport champs are not level anywhere else. World Supersport is the shallowest field of talent there is, and the shallowest field of top bikes there is. Does anyone in Spanish CEV class that just started last weekend destroys those guys in World Supersport? So PJ doing, having some speed in World Supersport means nothing in the long term. I mean, Josh Hayes got fourth one day in a World Super Sport, and Tony Elias is whipping his ass in fucking Moto America.
Tony Elias.
Yeah,
Tony Elias.
We don't even have time to cover Moto America, but...
Yeah, we don't need to.
We don't need to. Tiger Tony is destroying us. It happens. He's 3-4, so...
And where is he from? He's from MotoGP, so let's segue into MotoGP.
All right.
Yeah.
A lot of bang.
So what do you guys want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about Jerez or...
No.
Let's talk about the big thing, the confirmation.
The elephant in the room.
There's
biggest news that everyone knew was coming.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Jorge Lorenzo ditched Yamaha and signed for Ducati. And reports are that he's getting $25 million?
Hell yeah. Fucking getting paid, son.
For a year or for the first year?
Fucking per años.
Yeah.
No way. That's massive.
Well, so I think 2 years ago Ducati offered him like upwards of 15.
Yeah, it's 15, right?
They just keep bumping the.
In 2009, when this all started, when mystery illness milkshake drinking Casey Stoner decided to take three races off and not tell anyone why, that Marlboro said, "Look, we need someone who's going to sell cigarettes, basically, sell Cancer Six." And they offered Lorenzo like $10 million or $9 million, which at the time was huge,
yep.
And then he didn't take it. And then then 2000, whatever it was, 14, they offered him a big contract again. And now finally they just said, at some point, we're going to stop offering you a briefcase full of money and we're going to offer a dump truck full of money.
That's setting such unreal precedent, 25 million euro, right?
Right, like people are complaining about the wings are going to cost too much money in aerodynamic development, and they're doing all this cost reduction for bikes, and then they're just like, fuck it, let's just have a fucking salary race. Because Marquez is going to say, well, fuck you, he got $25 million, what are you giving me, Honda? I'm the only one that can ride your bike.
Yeah, but they don't have to do it, because who else is going to pay that kind of money? Yamaha's not going to do it. They got Rossi, and he's not even making that.
Yeah, Rossi's not making that because he sells Yamaha's merchandise.
you watch that. No one else is going to pony up that. I mean, Ducati kind of had to, right? Let's be honest.
Yeah, they had to. And if their bike proves to be a winner and maybe they get someone else getting closer, like maybe the price will come down. I mean, Jorge will retire, and I can't imagine that $25 million is now like the new bar for all the type riders. Like Vinales is not going to get $25 million from Yamaha if he goes there.
No,
What Yamaha offers you still is the best bike on the grid.
Yes.
And that's it. You can win and get endorsements and other stuff.
And that's basically what Lynn Jarvis said was we sent him and Rossi their contracts at the same time because they emailed them, which I don't believe for a fucking minute. You know, like he was on fucking Google Chrome. He's like, he was like, email us over real quick.
Not even
Shout out to Adobe. Shout out to DocuSign.
Yeah, so there's
anyway, yeah, exactly.
There's risk in taking the Ducati, therefore the price better be higher for an alien. Right. All
right,
so right,
but not only is the money reward higher, but the reward if he wins and does well in Ducati is massive. I'm gonna tell you right now, you know, I hate Lorenzo the blood red passion. I want him to win next year, and I want him to win big. I want lots of wins on that thing. I think that for him, you know, it's a good move to kind of get back in the graces of the fans and stuff, move on and kind of reinvent himself, not as the guy who thumbed down his own teammate and now gets booed incessantly. By the way, check out his Instagram account. Anytime he posts something, it's 8,000 comments of shit emojis.
What?
Kev, do you have red mist for Jorge Lorenzo?
No, you know, I'll tell you, I've said it a million times. Lorenzo is one of the fastest people on a motorcycle, and he's going to go down as one of the greatest ever. You think about who he's beat for his titles. He beat Rossi, the greatest of all time. Then he beat Stoner on a Honda, one of the greatest, most naturally gifted riders ever. Then he beat Marquez, you know, the new generation, the guy who broke all these records to win his titles. He's only beaten the best in the world. He's never had an easy group of riders to beat, and every guy he's beat has been guys that will go down in the Hall of Fame as some of the greatest ever. He's just so boring to watch that it makes me want to ice pick my fucking forehead.
His writing style is not good for this series, and we could go on about that for an hour.
Wait, his writing style is fine. It's the fact that he walks away and is so smooth and doesn't compete. That's, you mean that style?
That is, yeah, that is his writing style. Like
his style of domination.
Yeah.
The way in which he wins, which is he only wins if he gets out in front and then basically by war of attrition wins. He doesn't get in battles. During Phillip Island, you didn't see him and think, well, Jorge's going to win this one during that fucking titanic battle. What you see is Jorge jump out in front in a boring race and then just pound out perfect lap after perfect lap. The real question is he going to be able to do that on the Ducati after 8 years of developing the Yamaha towards that strategy, knowing that Ducati is a little more unpredictable, even though obviously it's a significantly better bike than it used to be.
Well,
so, I mean, personally, I think he saw two sets of wings, and he thought, two sets of wings? Yamaha, you can't up this.
But they'll get even better next year.
The Ducati or the Yamaha? What are you talking about?
The Ducati will get better next year. They've gotten better year over year since Gigi is gone.
What's interesting is that Gigi, yeah, who's a huge Jorge fan, who, you know, who worked with Jorge back in his 250 days, he said, Lorenzo has superior corner speed, and we will develop the bike around that. So that's also what they offered Jorge is $25 million, a pretty good bike, and straight up telling you right now, all development will be in your direction.
Well, and what else does Ducati need to develop? They already have the best motor on the grid. Like, they seem to be getting the best rear traction on the grid. They just need a little bit more from the front tire, and that's
a little more chassis.
Yeah, there's like nothing else. Like, I can't, like, they need a little more from the front tire, and they need a rider that can beat the other aliens.
Their acceleration's not the best. Their corner speed's not the best, but it's close. So if they can get those two,
what do you mean their acceleration's not the best?
They don't rev up as fast as the Honda by any means, and probably even the Yamaha. I think that
that bike hooks up way better.
Yeah,
I would say their acceleration's better than the other bikes.
Exactly. Marquez and Danny have explicitly said they're struggling with rear traction. Same thing. Suzuki has said they're struggling with rear traction.
The tire might change, right? So remember, what was it? Who was it, Kev or you, Rob, that said that? Remember they changed the tire for Jorge? couple of years back, and it was like, oh, night and day, and then he won the championship.
Well, they didn't change it for Jorge, but Bridgestone was having some overheating issues, so the heat.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that.
Yeah,
we don't.
Well, here's the thing. I know
he could have given an envelope to somebody full of money to make the tire for him.
I know you want to get into conspiracies all day long, but let's be real. Jorge is universally reviled by anyone outside of Spain. Jorge winning the championship is not what anyone but Lynn Jarvis wants, and now what Gigi wants.
Okay, so, answer this question. Who runs MotoGP?
Rossi.
Valentino Rossi.
No.
Come on, man. No. If we all know that Rossi runs it because after Sepang, he fucking told Dorna Boss, we'll meet my trailer.
That was like so great. Who runs MotoGP on paper?
Look, I'm not going to get into conspiracies and all that stuff like that. It's a good move for Jorge, and it's a good move for Ducati. And honestly, I think Jorge is going to gain fans and he's going to support.
Dennis, back me up, Dennis. Come on, Dennis.
No, we're not.
You know what? He's lurking.
Dennis isn't backing anyone up because all he's doing is waiting for that fucking Jorge Lorenzo Panigale to come out, and he will fucking put
and
a deposit. Damn.
Let me give you guys my take on that. I think that what Kev said was right. It's good for Jorge. It's good for Ducati. It's better timing than 2009 because they would have offered him a lot of money, but they wouldn't have had the bike at all to be competitive or do anything. Whereas now, it's a heck of a lot better bike. And this is what I like about it is that ever since Ducati overhauled their race program all the way to kicking out Filippo Preziosi for Gigi. No matter how we feel about the results, they have been developing forward and progressing, and I think they're at a point now where really it's a rider like Jorge or any one of the aliens that really needs to be the last piece of the puzzle. So
they need an alien. They need a top four guy to get to bring it home. Dovizioso has more than one near win. You know what I mean? Like, and we all know that as much as he's he's the hard worker and probably the best of the rest, he's not quite there compared to everyone else, but Jorge is.
Yeah, and
Marco
Dovi's results are actually very similar now in the Ducati to what they were on the Repsol Honda. Like, he had a bunch of near wins on Repsol. Yeah. You know? So, like, it's almost like Dovi is kind of tapped out. Like, he just can't push on that extra little tiny step to just get that win, you know?
Exactly.
So my point is, like, Ducati and Lorenzo now is the same situation as Ducati and Lorenzo 2009, but it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the bike is...
I know, exactly. Yeah. Ducati... And the other thing is, Ducati 2009 wasn't convinced that their bike sucked because Stoner was still winning on it. After Rossi went to Ducati and it failed miserably and Rossi and Burgess couldn't do anything, they quickly realized, holy shit, this, like, not only was Stoner a riding genius, but our bike is a fucking piece of shit.
And nobody can ride it.
They rehauled everything. And so now the whole culture of Ducati, Gigi didn't just change MotoGP. One of my cats is freaking out on the outside of my door now. It's pretty sweet. He's clawing to get in. yeah, exactly. Rob, go ahead. It's distracting me too much. I lost my thought.
Take over. Only cat with the cats.
The cat, I mean, Gigi changed... Change the whole culture of Ducati. Essentially, like, the factory is now different, right? Like, before Gigi came along, the factory built the bike and the race team ran it, and there was no communication between the two. Now Gigi is actually cycling engineers between the factory and the race team, like, consistently, so that everyone is on the same page for what they're actually trying to accomplish with the motorcycles. And obviously, like, you know, Gigi was a major proponent.
Yeah,
Gigi was a major proponent in getting a really solid testing crew. And, you know, Pirro is like, he replaces people and finishes, you know, mid pack, which is insane. You have a test rider that is faster than half the grid.
You have a test rider who's a CV Superbike champion who, you know, won Moto2 races and is a 7th through 12th finisher in MotoGP.
Yeah, and he won the CEV championship while he was also doing wild cards for World Superbike and wild cards for MotoGP.
So, Kev, Rob, Dennis, that begs the question: if GG's master plan is to get a balanced bike that anybody can ride, kind of like the Yamaha's been for years, imagine if Ducati in the next coming years gets all podiums, all Ducati podiums for like 2 or 3 years in a row. How freaking insane would that be if all this effort has been a lull and then it just pops and they just kill it?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly, you know, with the number of bikes on the grid they have, the number of development they're doing, and how decent, I mean, you look at the bikes on the grid, you know, Eugene Laverty just got a fourth. Scott Redding is looking with some serious speed. There's guys on those older Ducatis bringing in a lot of data, a lot of development, and we already know, we've talked about this numerous times, that Ducati is sending engineers to those satellite teams, even those third-tier satellite teams like Aventia and Aspar, and right. is taking everyone seriously. At some point, I mean, the sort of the old joke is that Yamaha and Honda race to sell bikes, whereas Ducati sells bikes so they can race. You know what I mean? Like, that's their focus, and that's the company they are, and at some point, it's going to bear fruit. A championship, I don't know, but we're going to find out, because they just signed one of the two best riders in the world, and they have a bike that certainly looks like it can do good and has, like, 19 wings on the front.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. It's
more wings.
Cool.
More wings. But all right, so Jorge is moving to Ducati. So where will the other chips fall? Finally, we actually get a silly season that stuff happens, right? Because if Jorge...
An epic silly season.
Yeah, if Jorge hadn't have moved, everyone would have kind of stuck where they were and nothing would have changed. But now we have a bunch of different options, right? We have Maverick moving to Yamaha, which would be amazing, but unfortunately he
and everyone seems there. To have penciled that in, and I think that's true, but that seems to be everyone's guess. Maverick to Yamaha.
Well, yeah, but how many times do we get surprised? I mean, I agree, but
we normally don't get surprised.
If it didn't.
We normally don't.
That's the thing. Surprised. You normally don't get surprised. So that we got one surprise means nothing else will be surprising.
Yeah, right. Well, it just the problem that we've heard lately is that he may actually be tied to Suzuki in his contract, because so he has an option for a third year, and there are rumors that if he podiums on the Suzuki, then Suzuki has an option to keep him, like, essentially against his will.
I will tell you this right now. I don't believe that for a second. No? I don't think that any GP rider signs that. I don't think that is even close. I think that is straight up fabricated bullshit from the Italian rumor mill, which, don't get me wrong, I love the Italian fabricated
rumor mill.
But I think that is just straight up not true. There's no way that that's true.
From the Italians? Because he's Spanish. Where did it come from?
Because no, that's just the Italian media making shit up because they got to sell papers. I think Maverick going to Yamaha is all but done. I don't believe the if he podiums he has to stay bullshit for 1 second. Any more than I believe that manufacturers want to keep a rider against their will, that's terrible publicity, and that's terrible for the championship long term.
Well,
same reason.
And it didn't work the last time someone tried to do it to
Maverick. That's right. Kev, you pointed it out. He breaches contracts, no problem. That's his game.
Yeah,
exactly. And again, we already know. I mean, Alex Barros breached contract to go to go to Repsol. Remember, and that was a huge thing. If Maverick Viñales gets offered a seat at Factory Yamaha, nothing will stop him from taking that. He already fired Nicky Ayo, his manager. So for whatever reason, that they had a pretty big falling out. We know he fucking plays by his own rules. I just don't think that if that's an open spot and Lynn Jarvis says that's your bike, that he's not finding a way to take it.
Yeah, I mean, any racer, right, would put that in for the Factory M1. Like,
if there's money, if Suzuki goes, guy, we think you're going to get it done, Mav, we'll up the ante and pay you more, then, you know, I mean, he's young and the money's important, so.
Yeah, but Mav's only 21 years old, dude. He money's going to come. He's not thinking, secure my future. He's thinking, there's my race win. He will breach contract and just no show at Suzuki. He already no showed at a race once in Moto 3. He will do what anything it takes to get that bike. And he should. He should fight tooth and nail, hell or high water, to get out of a shitty contract, to get out of a good contract, if that he can get, you know, Factory Yamaha.
To a winning bike.
Yeah.
So we all agree.
Shitting the bed at Suzuki is not a bad career move if there's a Factory M1 on the other side. Like,
all right, so we all agree. So then who backfills him?
Who backfills? That's well. So Rins is the other hot property, and we have no idea where he's going because we haven't. There have been really no interviews with him to see like if he's been tempted by Suzuki or Tech 3, like what he's feeling. Like it's just guessing at this point. And my money's on Tech 3 as opposed to Suzuki. And I think Suzuki will get one, if not two, new riders. But
yeah, I actually think Suzuki is going to start fresh with two new riders.
That would.
I think they're going to pull Moto2 up, and I think that the Andrea that gets booted from Ducati is going to Suzuki.
And one of the Andreas from Ducati would be a solid rider because, like,
absolutely.
I mean, Alesha's good, but we've seen his development prowess kind of fall off, and his results have fallen off. Like, maybe this last round he got some of it a little bit back, but, I mean.
Dennis has fallen off the map, listeners. Dennis is dead in water.
He's like here, but he just won't connect the audio. Whatever, Dennis will.
He's lurking.
Yeah. But he's lurking.
Next thing you know, is me liking photos from 3 years ago. Stalker.
We're gonna do it.
But all right. Whatever. Who else falls into place? We don't need to talk about Aprilia. They get
Sam. Zarco is in the conversation, right? I mean, he's definitely.
Why is Zarco in the conversation?
Like, I'm very impressed by Zarco, at least last year, and I do wonder if it was his chassis on that bike, just kind of like Tito Rabat a couple years back. He had the.
You can't say if it was the chassis. It. Everyone's running the same fucking chassis. Moto2 might as well be a spec class for everything.
No. You remember when Marquez had the unique Suter chassis? Nobody else had.
But that's different.
Maybe he does.
You're talking about 3 years ago. Everyone's on a Calix now, and you're either on the current year chassis or the previous year chassis.
But he might be getting the newest Calix chassis that has the best updates. You don't know, and I don't know.
Yeah, here's the thing.
I do know.
Oh, well, so look at this guy. He's calling Calix. You calling Calix?
So last year, Zarco was on the old Calix chassis, the one that actually had front end fuel.
Right, because Zarco switched from Suter to Calix, and everyone that switched last year got the previous year's chassis, and everyone that was an existing Calix guy got the new chassis. And the new chassis wasn't as good as the old chassis.
Correct, but this year, Zarco was on current stuff.
Like, I know shit.
Yeah.
Dropping knowledge,
that
son.
Was the most technical thing you ever said, Kevin.
That was solid. I was very impressed.
But this year, Zarco is on current, up-to-date chassis, the same as his competitors. So he like.
Yeah, but he's lagging a little bit more than he was last year. So
yeah,
there was
a technical advantage last year, but this year it's head-to-head. We are finally going to see what's going on. I mean, yeah, it's just.
So you're saying Zarco is not really the real deal? But so now we're talking. And Lowe's?
I've never thought he was the real deal.
I don't think Zarco or Lowe's are the real deal. I think they're placeholders while real deals move up.
Yep.
Zarco was never a contender until the top quality talent left.
Took off. Yeah. But refresh my memory. Who runs the current Suzuki team?
Grivio.
Oh, that's right. I saw him in the last race. I was thinking it was the Crescent team from BSB, and then Lowe's might be a shoo-in.
No, Lowe's had – all the talk of Lowe's was he had a pre-contract with Aprilia. He already races with Gresini, and he had a pre-contract. Now, whether he wants to actually make that jump to be Aprilia, I have no idea.
Well, yeah, look where they're running around. Would you rather be – so, you know, I've always asked this question too, is would you rather be a front runner in Moto2 or a back marker in MotoGP? Probably MotoGP.
You'd rather be in MotoGP. I don't know why you continue to ask this question.
Because I'd rather finally get to where I can maybe get a good ride and bump up instead of a mid-pack and then fade away after a year or two.
No,
you don't get a good ride.
Old. They're too old, and there's they haven't
you just take it.
Young talent. You take it because you want to be in MotoGP, and you hope that you can do better than the guys on the same level of equipment and then get like one step up. But I mean, at least if Lowe's goes to GP on the Aprilia, it'll be the factory Aprilia. So there is a bit more of an upshot than if you went to the third tier. You know.
Here's the thing, and you look at the talk about Maverick is it goes into it exactly. If you go to a satellite team, you're never going to be on a factory team. It's not going to happen. You have to start. You never get brought up. Look at all the guys who've gone to Tech 3 and thought they got to be brought up. Only Ben speaks. You know what I mean? If you come into MotoGP, you come in as a factory rider or you're a satellite rider who never gets pulled up. Scott Redding never getting pulled to a factory bike. Tito Rabat never going pulled to a factory bike. No one who's on a satellite bike is ever getting pulled up. I mean, I guess
that is such a remarkable like connection to the reality of how it works. I mean,
Cal Crutchlow, maybe, but he was a factory rider for 1 year before they bought him out and sent him packing back to a satellite ride because they just didn't want it. You know what
sorry,
I mean?
Sorry, guy, we accidentally tagged you factory. My bad, we mistagged you.
Right, yeah, exactly. So it's almost like being tagged a franchise player in football or baseball. At some point you realize that it being a factory rider has a level of prestige that guys chase, and that level, I mean, Maverick is going to go from all the talk in the world is that Maverick, the guy who's never podiumed in MotoGP, is going to go straight to Yamaha factory. And why is that? Because Suzuki, another factory, invested 3 years worth of investment into that guy.
Yep. And I mean, and he's actually kind of backing it up by beating his teammate.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, there's no bigger Maverick mark than me, obviously, but he's gonna get another factory ride based on that. And I think Lowe's, maybe a factory Aprilia turns into a factory Suzuki, or turns into a, you know what I mean, turns into something else. I don't even know if the factory KTM counts, because that's sort of a weird customer bike situation taking
place. Well, it's, yeah, we Suzuki didn't a couple years there. Back, right?
Their KTM is changing their mind constantly, depending on the
right.
How the whole series is working out. But to address your point about no satellite riders actually making it to a factory ride, the problem there was the talent, right? Like Dan, the aliens have stuck around for so long and been so competitive.
Right, and that goes to Everett. Right, that goes to Everett's point about almost wishing Danny would leave just to see something new. You know what I mean? Like, Danny and Rossi have had this, you know, lock, and Jorge too have had this lock on the top four seats, and they've been the best guys for so long, it's almost like kind of bored it out. You're just like, let me see someone new, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, in like, because there are four of them, like, they adequately take up all the factory spots or the majority of them, and there's no one else to see. But so we might, when they finally do retire, we will get this major reshuffling, and those satellite riders are gonna be in the best spot. Like, if Scott Redding does amazing, he potentially could get whatever Andrea's spot is left, because
I don't think so. I mean, I'd love to see it, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think already spent too many years in MotoGP. He has two seasons with lackluster results. It doesn't matter. They was on shitty bikes, and now he's on a Pramac Ducati. I think his chances at a factory seat are done. No, as much as I'd like to see him on the factory seat.
Yeah, Rob, chances are he won't last long enough. He just won't. So, there'll be a Moto2 guy that gets it.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is it all depends on what talent we actually get up in Moto2, because all the other talent, the talent that's not leaving Moto2 this year, is really not there, and all they're going to do is beat themselves. So there's really not going to be any there's not going to be a ruler in there to figure out who's actually good and who's just kind of beating the other crappy riders. Like, for
right, and for all you internet haters who were going to bring up that Iannone was a satellite rider who got bumped up, he was getting factory rides as the Pramac guy. That came out. He was riding a factory bike under Pramac colors. And
technically, Cal's on a factory bike again.
Yeah.
Not like Ducati was giving.
Not a team. A factory bike.
Pramac.
And the team is really what makes the difference.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, Ducati spreading around their engineers is more helpful than Honda giving Cal a new fuel tank. Which showed last year.
Yeah, it's a great
example. Which showed last year and how he got the new fuel tank and did nothing with it. But all right. There is so much.
So good. That was the best.
We can talk about silly season for hours, but we should probably move on. So Dennis is failing at the technical side of getting into this conversation. So here is his question.
This is a surprise question, bitches.
So I've read it now because Dennis texted it to me, and Everett and Kevin have no idea what it is. If Maverick does take Jorge's seat in Yamaha, now that Jorge is going to Ducati, which one of them can win a title first?
Maverick.
What?
Really?
I'll tell you right now. I'm saying this as the biggest Rossi fan in the world, who helped design the inaugural BrotoGP shirt with a Rossi on it. If Maverick goes to Yamaha next year, I'm betting money he wins the title.
What? Really?
I'm that big of a Maverick guy.
I don't think it's that easy. I got to think about that because I mean it's such a.
I think you should shut up.
No.
Well, okay, but so it's only
that's a great question, Dennis. By the way,
it's only first between the two. Like I would put money on Marquez next year, but if we're betting Mav versus Jorge, oh.
I thought we were betting Mav versus Rossi. Let me back up.
No,
wait a second. Jorge? It's Mav versus Lorenzo.
Or sorry, yeah.
Who wins first?
First.
Who wins a race or who wins a title?
Title. Who wins title? The title
first? He said it four times, Kev.
What? Okay, I thought the whole time we were comparing Rossi and Maverick, like who was at the Yamaha.
You always think about Rossi. That's okay. We understand.
Okay, let me back it up then. That's a little tougher of a question, but it's always difficult for me to bet on Ducati as a title winner because their resources are so low that their ability to react from the engineering point of view mid-season is much more difficult than it is for Yamaha.
Yeah,
Yamaha just simply has a better ability to adapt and adjust mid-season.
Ducati did well at the beginning of the year, and then they just trail off.
Well, And Ducati sometimes just gets it insanely right, and that gives them a very competitive advantage for a long enough period of time or the entire season, a la Casey Stoner and new tires,
yeah, but
or
that,
the engine before that.
Like
or
I swear I remember him doing better in the first half of the season and then not being as dominant in the second half. Like they just
I agree. They still lag.
Yeah, Yamaha.
And they don't make the investment.
Mid-season development and somehow like are faster after the summer break, whereas
Ducati I vote Lorenzo.
I love Maverick so much, I'm still voting Maverick.
Do you sleep with a Maverick doll at night?
I do. I have a Maverick Vinales doll, widow's peak and all.
You need to like get Maverick's number like spray painted on one of your cats or something. Like that would
exactly. My Maverick doll comes free with his chunky girlfriend accessory.
Yes.
That was mean.
Yeah, that's how I do.
Yeah, I know.
I think that if Maverick goes to Yamaha, you're gonna see shades of the of how Stoner was on Honda and then Stoner was on Ducati. I think if you put a perfect bike underneath him, because let's be real, the Yamaha M1 is probably the greatest motorcycle that's ever been built, straight up, from a racing point of view.
Yeah,
I think Maverick next year on the Yamaha, if he gets it, fucking destroys people. I think it's ugly.
It's not Johnny Ray ugly though, right? Like
No.
Come
because
on.
Marquez is too
Kev,
good. Renzo's
you really
too good.
Are riding that Mav train. I mean, he's not that leaps and bounds above all the other aliens. Marquez, Lorenzo. Lorenzo's on that bike now. You really think he's gonna be that much faster and better than Lorenzo?
Do I think he another year of development, especially with now getting it away from Lorenzo's odd style development more towards a Rossi development? I'm still voting Maverick.
I'm also voting Maverick, and I think it's because Rossi is going to do the development part and keep
the development. Yeah, that's his only leg.
The bike will be phenomenal because Rossi is going to make the front end will be awesome. Maverick is still young enough that he can morph his style to ride anything. And then you give Maverick the factory Yamaha technicians, and he will get up to speed on that bike so quickly.
Right. I think Honda is circling the drain a little bit with going down the rabbit hole, man. The only guy who can ride that bike is otherworldly Marquez. Everyone else is doing terrible. Even Danny, who got a podium last race, in Argentina, just basically said, yeah, I shouldn't have got that anyway. Like, and Danny Pedrosa's a beast. You know what I mean? This is a guy who's won 7 races a season before, and he's the 3-time world champ. And he really is having a hard time with that bike. I think that Honda's developmental path right now, they need to get back on track.
Yeah,
Marquez has 2 wins. That's because he's Marquez.
Yeah, and that getting back on track is not going to happen by the start of the season next year. Like, it might happen by the end of the year next year. It's not going to happen this year either. Like, they've already sunk into the rabbit hole way too far to get out of it.
Yeah, it's too far, yeah.
Yeah.
But you did see the leaps and bounds they're making every race. Yeah. I think at Jerez, you'll see those two Hondas up front. You will.
Okay, so that segues perfectly into the sort of original idea of this episode was a Jerez preview episode. I'm saying Jerez because Dennis isn't here, Jerez. And someone needs to say it with an accent.
Yeah, so we finally make it back to Europe, and this
where
is
the
now,
season begins.
Yeah, the start of the actual season. So last year we saw some crazy stuff from Ducati in the first three races. Like the season was nuts. And then we got back to Europe and Lorenzo took over. So are we gonna get like he won four straight? Are we gonna get that again?
No. The tires.
No, Lorenzo.
Are we gonna get that again?
They're too much of a wild card for Lorenzo this year. Everyone's on edge. We've all been talking about it. It's not that simple to put together four races in a row this year. But you're gonna see this track where they all have experience. It's gonna be.
Yeah, but these guys that race in this track. All of these front runners have been racing Jerez since they were 12.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like literally, since they were preteens, they've been around this track. So it's a whole different ballgame. Do I think that Jorge is going to start five wins in a row? Probably not, because I think that you're not going to see Marquez win or bin as much this year as he did last year. And he's kind of admitted that he's settling for podiums when he gets it. He said that at Qatar. So you're probably not going to have the chance where he's going to, you know, throw it away chasing a win. So it's going to be a little harder for him to get Marquez to, you know, throw himself off within the first few laps. And so I think that I'm not so sure who's going to win, but it's probably one of the top two.
Yeah. I was actually thinking Rossi, which I'm generally not the guy to say Rossi, but
wait, didn't
I think
we already took votes for the Jerez race, right? For wins. Did we do that last?
Probably.
I'm pretty sure I said Rossi.
I think Rossi, or, you know, I still like Marquez right now. I think he's figured out the tires the best, but
yeah. So that's the thing, right? Is we're going to tracks that all the teams and all the riders know quite well, but Michelin has not tested at all of them, and all the factories, especially since, you know, Michelin has changed the front tire repeatedly, even since they tested back during the middle of last season. And they've now changed the construction on the rear tires to get rid of those overheating problems or the delamination problems or whatever they want to call it when tires blow up on the straightaways. So the tires are completely different. So, and we've seen at COTA and in Argentina that people just miss the setup. Stuff goes wrong. And it makes for a more interesting race, but at the same time, we still have the same front runners up there. So,
right.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past Jorge to get four wins in a row, but I agree that I don't think he's going to do it. I think Marquez will probably win half of them, and then the Yamahas will take the other two. But I don't know. I want to see more Ducatis up front. Do you think they're actually going to be able to carry do you think they're going to be able to get their results back up to where they should be?
I guess that depends on whether Dovizioso gets taken out again. I mean, whoa, dude, that guy's having Ben Spies level bad luck.
Yeah, but not his mechanics' fault this time. Now it's all it's the other riders.
Right. If you ask Everett, it probably means someone paid them off to run him over.
I thought only Bautista took money to take people out.
Yeah, exactly.
There is definitely some mafioso shit going on right there, dude. Italians.
But all right, so where does Ducati finish at Jerez?
Solid, you know, 4 or 5.
So a failure then, right? Because they want to be on the podium. Finishing fourth and fifth is just meh, lackluster results.
Yeah, that's no longer the case. You know, finishing fourth and fifth is not what they're looking for. You know, and especially I think the one thing to take into account is that Lorenzo announcing the signings so early means both those Andreas know one of them has got to go, son. So is Iannone going to go balls to the wall, red mist, and try and really fucking go for a win or get a podium or, you know, win or bin? Or is Dovizioso going to think, I got to put it together and get some solid podiums to keep this ride?
Be consistent, yeah.
Be consistent and get on that podium, because he's been in podium contention all three rounds. And again, he's been riding these tracks since he was, you know, a preteen too. So becomes, you know, is Jorge's signing going to affect? Because one of the things about this epic silly season is with Jorge switching and so many seats starting to explode open, there's a lot of riders thinking, that I'm one good result away from someone taking a chance on me. A Scott Redding or a Cal Quattro or any of those guys are – the musical chairs is going to take place is so huge, the possibility that there's a lot of writers who think I'm not in it for the title. I'm not in it day in, day out. So if I'm on it this one day, I'm taking every risk there is. I'm taking every chance.
I mean, that's how Polis Cargo is going to get a good ride.
Maybe. But my point being that if that seat's open, that theoretically means a Suzuki seat's open. That means a Ducati seat's open, right? So we know that multiple good, well-paying factory rides are open. That means guys who are normally getting 4th through 10th are going to be riding balls to the wall to try and get some. Because, you know, a Scott Redding knows that one win might mean someone takes a chance on him. Or a Spargaro knows that one podium keeps his seat at Suzuki. Or Yannone knows that finally getting that win we've all been waiting for is what cements him to stay at Ducati. So there's going to be dudes taking some risks that we have not seen before. Too many rides are open. Everyone's contract is up, and too many good seats are open. I think you're going to see some melees in these next coming races.
And it's awesome because it's only round 4.
Right. Right.
So, like, championships are going to do – someone's championship is going to do really well, and other people are just going to tank because they're going to crash, like, 3 races in a row. So – and we've already seen it, right? Like, people are making mistakes in races because they're still not riding the Michelins like the Michelins. They're riding them like Bridgestones. So, yeah, I agree with you, Kev, that it's going to be nuts, and people are going to continue making mistakes. And I don't know if we could call them like silly, stupid rider errors, but they're definitely going to be riding over their head, and they're not going to be riding smart because they're thinking about contract and they're thinking about all this stuff.
And here's the thing, man. Are you not riding smart? I mean, if you're trying to get a result that's going to get you paid a couple million bucks in a factory ride, take the risks because that's a smart risk to take.
I mean, is it smart if you bin it and you end up on the KTM, or if you just wait for everyone else to crash and get like a 4th place and end up in factory Suzuki? Like, what choice is actually smart?
I just don't think that the no one who gets an attrition podium is getting, you know, the look. They're like, maybe we'll take a chance on that guy as our second rider. It's someone who has the flash of brilliance. It's someone who Petrucci's in the rain like last year. You know what I mean? Who's just going so fast, you're like, what the fuck is that guy doing?
The attrition rider will be the one that gets the seat alongside Bradley at KTM. And then the flash in the pan will get that other Pramac.
That's like the consolation prize.
But all right, let's make some predictions. Do we want to talk about the race again?
I mean, if we're going to predict, you know, who's racing. I don't want to predict now because I've had just enough to drink of this La Playa Sauvignon Blanc from fucking Sucrino Valley, Chile, that I can't remember who I predicted to win the race last episode, and I don't want to sound like a hypocrite.
I hope that I said Rossi last round because that's where I'm going with this one. Last episode, I mean. Because, it would look silly to change my mind already, and nothing has happened. Everett, any thoughts? Are you also going to not predict anything?
I forget what my original prediction was. I want to say it was Marquez. I still think I hope it's like a couple years back where Lorenzo ran away and then it was Marquez Rossi. I hope those two guys are at the front battling. That's my prediction. And then Lorenzo is probably third.
All right. Where does Danny Pedrosa finish?
I think Danny again, like I said last year, is on a slow but steady decline. Maybe he gets third, maybe he gets fourth. I think the Honda is a difficult bike to ride right now. It doesn't lend itself to his style. He's aging. He's injured. Those injuries start to come back, man. You get in your late 20s, early 30s, and all those fucking injuries, your bones start creaking in the morning, man. You're stiff. And I just
I think
he'll melee with the Ducatis. I mean, if that's, you know, that's all.
I actually think that he kind of figured out something in at the last two rounds, or at least at COTA. And
why?
Because he explicitly said it. He explicitly said it in the post race interview that he changed his riding style and not the bike, and that helped him out with the results tremendously. So I think he's gonna get third.
All right. Yeah. I mean, again, third for Pedrosa, you know, that's just kind of like, good job, bro. You know?
Yeah, but last year he got – what did he get last year? It doesn't matter. But all right.
Fourth or something, probably fifth.
Something like that. Kevin, you want to close us out?
I don't have any cool thoughts from old 80s cartoons unless we combine to become Voltron. Defender of the universe.
But all right, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in a week after the MotoGP Jerez rounds.